Welcome to the Mercia Wellbeing Podcast with me, Michael Civita. This series gives us all an opportunity to sit back, reflect, and consider how we and the people around us, both in and outside of work, are really doing. I will be joined by a guest speaker each episode, and together we will share tips and techniques to help us take better care of ourselves. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Mercia Wellbeing Podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by my colleague at Mercia, John Sharkey, and we'll be talking about the importance of relaxation and some of the techniques that we can use to help us relax and switch off. So hi, John, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty relaxed, actually. Thank you, Michael. I would say I'm practicing what I'm about to preach. So yeah, I'm good, thank you. How about you?
I'm also feeling relaxed as well, John. So that's good to hear. So let's get straight in then, John, because this is a very topical area, isn't it? You know, this is something that we're talking to clients a lot about, and also spending time sort of talking to, you know, our teams and within Mercia about ensuring that we are factoring in, you know, sufficient time into our busy lives to just relax. And why is it so important? You know, why is relaxation so important?
Well, you use the word factoring in there, Michael, as an alternative to what else we are doing. And it's partly because we are doing so much in our lives and the pressures on our lives, particularly over the last 12 to sort of 15 months with the pandemic, there have been increased pressures on many people, and people have been finding that they need to factor in alternatives to that pressure that they're under. And one of the coping mechanisms that we talk about is finding time to relax, because relaxation has been proved to improve a number of different things. If we can find time to do it, there's physical benefits as well as mental benefits to be derived from relaxation. And if you can find time to relax, it's been shown that the physical benefits can increases your blood flow. It slows down your heart rate. By increasing your blood flow, it gives you more energy for dealing with things and in the day to day. It'll slow your heart rate down if you find something that will relax you.
Yeah. So I guess there's physical benefits, and we know that, don't we? You know, when we get into something, we're going to talk about some techniques today, but we know that how we feel, don't we, when we are in that relaxation mode. And I guess for our listeners, there's really, two factors, isn't there? You've mentioned already, you know, the time, giving ourselves the time to do it, but also the actual mode of relaxation, actually picking something, you know, a technique, something that's appropriate for not just you as a person, but also for, you know, for the situation. And we're going to talk about that as well, you know, and I really want to spend some time looking at sort of some of the different techniques that we can use. But if we stick with time to begin with, and you know, we talk a lot, don't we, with clients about, you know, just making it happen, you know, not just relaxation, but a lot of the techniques that we talk about on our sessions, you know, just giving yourself the time to make it happen. You know, what are the biggest tips that we can give people for ensuring that it does happen, whatever relaxation method they use?
Okay, well, I guess it goes back to some of the time management techniques that we talk about on other courses, isn't it? Because what we've got to recognize is this needs to be a priority for us because of the benefits that we will derive from it, that when we do find time to do it, the benefits will outweigh whatever costs there are associated with it, i.e. not doing something else. So it's the fundamentals of prioritization. So in order to do that, you've got to recognize just how important this is for us in order to balance up between our hectic, busy lives and some sort of technique of relaxation. And that's something you talk about making it happen. So it's going to be scheduling. It's going to be some of the things we talk about in how do I find time to do something. Making a time in your day when you know that you will have time to do whatever it is that you're going to do and making it happen. And that could mean putting it in your diary if that's what you use, making it a to-do list, starting to make it a habitual in terms of your day-to-day routine, because otherwise the rest of your life will take over. And, you know, that's when we talk about some of the techniques, some of them are easier to fit into your day than others. Some can fit sort of bookend outside of the working day. Some can be during the working day. You can do some of these relaxation techniques, are very short and sharp techniques that we'll talk about. Others need a little bit more time, but, you know, pigeonhole it at a time, when plan it in at a time when you know you're going to be able to do it. Otherwise, you'll say, oh, I haven't got time for that now.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, keeping an open mind, you know, some of the things that we talk about with clients on things like mindfulness and the importance of breathing techniques, which we'll touch upon today, but having an open mind, but also it's really important, isn't it, to focus on the benefits to you having had that relaxation period. And I think that really helps with the actual scheduling and making it happen. You know, we want people to see relaxation as something as important as making sure that you brush your teeth in the morning. You know, it doesn't matter how busy you are, you're always going to make sure that you prioritize that. So really get, you know, really getting people and encouraging people to take care of themselves and valuing their, you know, their mental health and physical health as a priority. And I think that's, you know, we've got a lot of work to do on that, haven't we? You know, there's a lot of work that we need to do.
Yeah, society is coming round to it, I think. It's the very fact that we're running wellbeing clubs for Mercia, these podcasts for our clients. It's become acceptable to talk about the subject of wellbeing. It's been becoming more acceptable to talk about our mental well-being as well. You mentioned the word mindfulness there. That's something that a lot of people associate that with some kind of hippie new age type behavior, don't they? It's a very simple thing. We'll talk a little bit more about it now. There's skepticism around some of this stuff, yoga, tai chi, meditation. Whoa, what's all that about? We're slowly coming around to thinking that these, as a profession, I suppose, we're slightly more conservative than other professions and other walks of life. So in terms of our profession, there's a lot of hesitation maybe around some of the techniques we're going to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. And that links back to the open mind. And that's what I would encourage everybody to do, especially when we start thinking about some of the techniques. Try it. Don't dismiss a technique. Try it and see, you know, what impact some of them techniques have on you. But also as well, not feeling guilty about devoting and allocating some time to yourself every day to relax. Okay. We all have, you know, very busy schedules, you know, parents, you know, caring responsibilities, but we do need to be making sure that we are, you know, giving ourselves enough time, okay, each day to just focus, you know, focus on us.
Can I just pick up on that? Sorry, Michael, I can't emphasize this enough. We've talked about the physical benefits there, but when you find time to relax, it's going to help your mind in a way. It's going to make it much calmer, much clearer. It's going to help with your thinking. It's going to help with your focus. It helps you remember stuff, helps with your concentration, and helps you become more decisive. So it's almost like it's not something, oh, I've got to get out of the way so I can get on with the real stuff. It's going to help the rest of your life in whatever facet, with your personal life or your working life. If you find time to relax, it's going to help the other side of your life as well.
Yeah, and it makes you calmer. And, you know, there's a picture that you can sort of visualize of that, where, you know, someone walking through a meadow. And I don't necessarily mean that, you know, in meetings, you know, when you're having sort of creative discussions at work, it actually allows you to sort of like process what is happening, rather than allowing yourself to be focusing on all of the other things that you've got to do today. So it actually just gives you that sort of the level of flow, but also calmness, which is really important. Yeah. All right. So let's have a think about some of the techniques then, some of the relaxation techniques. So let's keep it nice and practical. You know, what works for you as part of your relaxation?
There are a number of things that I find relax me. Some you might be surprised at. Some are more traditional in concept, I suppose. But the things that I get most relaxation are gardening. I find being in nature is very powerful for me. It's kind of, I lose myself in, and whatever part of gardening it is, I actually find weeding, because I'm focusing it. I'm totally absorbed in what I'm doing, whether it's mowing the lawn, weeding, bringing on plants, nurturing, watering, whatever it is in the garden. And there's something about that green space as well that I find is a relaxing environment, but I'm focused. And that, I guess that's one of the things we will talk about as well, is that something where I can, the other thoughts that I might have had, my busy mind that might be around my head, just stop, and I'm just focusing on what it is that I'm doing. So for me, gardening, for walking, going out in the morning and the evening. In lockdown, we've had our commutes replaced, or not everybody has replaced their commute if they had one. Some people just work longer while they're at home. But I've tried to sort of bookend my day with a walk in the, I'm lucky enough to live near the countryside, so I can get out within a few minutes into an open fields, through some woods. And while I'm doing that, I'm getting exercise, which is good anyway. So I'm getting some physical benefit from it, but I'm also just allowing my mind to just to watch and notice some of the beautiful things that are around me. And in that sense, I guess that aligns to the garden, nurturing and bringing on things is very satisfying. But also just walking in the open air, noticing the plants, noticing the field, the sky, the trees, the sounds. It's absorbing. And maybe that's, we'll talk about mindfulness. That's part of mindfulness, isn't it? Noticing what's going on around us. And I find that very relaxing. How about you?
Yeah, I'm quite similar, actually, in that way. I like to spend time in the garden. And I think for me, I'm very focused on, when it comes to sort of relaxation, are the feelings and so like the emotional benefits, but also the physical benefits of the relaxation sort of techniques that I use. And I think that actually helps me with the scheduling that, you know, as you said earlier. So like gardening, for example, and, you know, tending to the garden and making sure, you know, the pots are being watered. That's a relaxation technique, but I also know, okay, that I really enjoy looking at the garden once we've spent time on it. And I'm very mindful of that. You know, I'm very mindful of, I know that I will enjoy this evening sitting in the garden, you know, with the lights on, looking at the garden. And in a very similar way to physical exercise, you know that I like to play tennis. I do a lot of walking, running when it's not too hot. So I like to go running. But once again, you know, sometimes it can be quite difficult to motivate yourself to do some of them things, which are relaxing. But as well, I think it's really important to focus on the benefits and you know, being conscious of the benefits of doing that. And I know that when I've been out for a long walk and I've been able to just unwind and relax, the benefits of that afterwards are that I feel so much calmer. You know, I feel relaxed. And if I've been out for a run or a game of tennis, you know, a game of tennis is a little bit different because the benefits there, if I've won, are that I can be very proud of a win. But, you know, going for a run, yeah. You know, people might say, well, that's not very relaxing. You know, going for a run, it's painful. Some people would describe it as, but I know that when I've been out for a run, you know, the feeling can be euphoric, you know, after going for, you know, going for a run.
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, is that hormones, the endorphins you get from that? I'm not sure. It must be. There's a buzz. You get a buzz
from it. Yeah, that's it. So I think, you know, it is very much being, in order to make it happen, and I'm very, you know, very sort of focused on that, it is focusing on, you know, how will I feel? What will the benefits to me be of afterwards? It's like cooking. You know, a lot of people love to cook, and I quite like cooking as well. It's like, what benefits is that bringing, you know, as part of the relaxation? And you know, for a lot of people, they love, delighting other people and pleasing people. And therefore, by cooking a meal that your family, you know, enjoy, you've got the relaxation through the activity, but you've also got the benefit to you afterwards. And I think by focusing on the benefit is a really good way for making it happen.
What was interesting there, you talked about tennis, and that just reminded me that in terms of some of the benefits of relaxation, or some of the sources of relaxation, are doing something with somebody else with whom you can be, all right, you're competitive in your tennis, I realize that, but also these are people whom you are there as Michael, not as Michael, the management trainer. You're there as a friend, probably, with these people. And what I like to think, and I don't do it consciously, but they are my part of my support network. I don't play tennis. I play table tennis on a Saturday with a bunch of guys. And we're ex-hockey players. We can't play hockey anymore. But we get together and we have a very relaxing time. It's almost as if the table tennis is an excuse for that group to get together. And we can be completely relaxed with each other. We don't care actually what our day jobs are or anything like that. I can be open if I'm having a bad time. You know, they're happy to hear about it. They're happy to help if they can. But there's that sense of well-being being around them. And there are sometimes, and it's on a Saturday at 4, and I think, can I be bothered to do that? I could just finish the lawn, but I make time for it because I know your point about afterwards and during, I will feel good about it. I'll have that sense of belonging, that sense of support. Those people, you know, they would do anything for me and I'd do anything for them. And that's a great feeling to have. And, you know, that's with friends. You can have that with family. You can have it with colleagues as well. It's an important thing, that supportive network.
Definitely. And I think I just completely agree with everything that you've just said. And I think for me, it's that authentic self, isn't it? You know, it's being around people that you can be your absolute self. You know, you don't have to, tread on eggshells or worry or, you know, having to think, you know, strategically about what you say, just being able to just be in the moment with them people and just be your absolute self. And they appreciate you and they respect you for just being you. And I think that is such a powerful thing, you know, when you're picking yourself, you know, when you're picking the support circle, as you describe, be picking people that you can be your absolute self with.
So yours were based around quite a bit of physical exercise in your relaxation, isn't there? So you're definitely going to get the physical benefit from it. But what about, because I've become more interested in some of the more, I've got to be careful how I put this, transcendental or something that takes us noticing, I'm walking, I'm noticing things around me. And I guess I'm practicing a form of mindfulness, in which for me means just paying attention to the present, paying more attention to the present. And by that, I don't just mean what's going on around you, but also what's going on within you, almost your thoughts and your feelings that you're having. And sometimes those thoughts and feelings might not be the best thoughts or feelings. We could talk about that, unhelpful thoughts and feelings, but it's important to recognize them. And that mindfulness of noticing stuff around you has been, again, shown to be good for our mental and physical well-being. It combats stress, and we can just enjoy life more if we can find time to be mindful of what's going on around us and what's going on inside of us as well.
Yeah, and I think with that point, I think that links really well to sort of self-awareness and knowing what you, or being aware of what you want to achieve from the relaxation. So what I mean by that, there will be certain times where maybe because of work, because of deadlines, that you can feel absolutely wired, can't you? You know, where you just feel as though sort of cognitively you can't process anything else. And then therefore reading, which for a person might be, you know, a relaxation activity, might not be a good choice for them on that occasion, because they're so wired, their brain is so full. The idea of, you know, trying to engage with a story and characters and trying to sort of predict what's going to happen next actually is too much. And I've experienced it before where I've been on holiday, you know, on the first couple of days on holiday, and I open a book and I'm really trying to sort of use that book and use reading as a relaxation technique. And actually, I know it's not being processed because I've got so much, you know, so many thoughts going on in my mind at that time. So in that scenario, the best thing for you might be some mindfulness activity, you know, meditation, for example, you know, is a good example, where you are just completely calm, you know, completely just at ease with your breathing, okay, with your focus. So I think what you've just described, I think links really well to that idea that, you know, it's good to have various techniques, but then pick something that is going to help you in that situation based on what has caused the desire to relax. I know someone that loves to, you know, relax by listening to music and dancing around in the kitchen. And I know that's, you know, not for everybody, but that might not be appropriate, okay, in all situations either. So I think it's having the variety, but that also is part of, you know, your self-awareness. I know that, you know, we speak to a lot of clients that have that use some of these apps, don't they, as part of Headspace, for example.
And calm. In fact, we were running a well-being club with some colleagues recently, and one of them used that. Just what you're saying, that they I forget which one it was, Calm or Headspace are two of the most well-known ones. They're slightly different in their approach to it, but what they said was sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and it's not always a guarantee to relax them. And the issue was that you can use them to help you get to sleep. This colleague was struggling to get a good pattern of sleep going, and this helped them do that. However, it didn't always help them do that. It's not a guarantee, because sometimes, as you say, their brain was too wired, had too much going on. Whatever it was that was going around in the head isn't going to get resolved by a Headspace app, all right? They need to do something else with it. One of the things they talked about is at night they were writing things down, getting it out of their heads and putting it on a piece of paper and just trying to offload whatever it was that they were worrying about or thinking about, get it out of their heads and get it down on paper. But listening to the calming music or talking of the person was a distraction and was actually keeping them awake. So isn't that interesting?
It is. Yeah, no, definitely. What other techniques do we have, John?
Well, you talked about yoga, meditation, perhaps more structured techniques of deliberate practice. And I know a lot of friends and colleagues use yoga, meditation, even Tai Chi, a form of Tai Chi, which is becoming more popular, as exercise combined with mental agility and mental relaxation. I think you mentioned briefly about breathing as part of that process and being a useful technique to relax or calm oneself. And often at the root of all of those things, meditation, yoga, Tai Chi, is managing our breathing to help our minds relax and bodies relax. And I've taken a lot more interest in this now. It's partly as a short understanding how our breathing has such an impact on how we feel, what's happening in terms of our physiology. Actually, if you alter your breathing, you can change your physiology in your body, and you can sort of reduce some of the anxiety, some of the stress that might be going on in your mind or in your body at that time, just by deliberately choosing to breathe in a different way. So there's all sorts of techniques around this, but just having a more regular pattern of breathing from the right part of one's body, because quite often when we're feeling anxious or stressed, it's one of the quick fixes you can do. If I'm feeling very, very pressurized, I just need to try and stay calm and relaxed. It's just to moderate my breathing. Often when we're feeling anxious, our breathing gets very short and intermittent, and we're not breathing enough in, and we're not letting it go as long as out as we should do. So it becomes very sort of a staccato breathing, and it's very unhelpful. And it's sending a message to our brain. Our brain is feeling anxious, and in that sense, our breathing is going along with that, and it's going, oh gosh, there's a threat here, and it's agitating our breathing. What you can do is slow your breathing down in the way I suggested, you know, breathing in for 4 seconds and out for 4 seconds. And that, what that does is really interesting. Mentally and physically, it calms things down. It sends a message to your brain that this is no longer as fearful. And it says, oh, this is going to be okay. It's an associative device.
Okay, so let's just give that a go. So, that breathing exercise. So you mentioned there sort of four in, four out. So just so I understand. So that would be
four beats And try and breathe it from your diaphragm. Rather than, quite often we breathe it from up too high in our chest. Try and breathe it in from a much lower, from lower the diaphragm, the bottom of one's rib cage. And just breathe in for four beats, and then breathe out for four beats. It's called water breathing. It's quite interesting. Okay. That's how we should always breathe. So let's just try it. I'll count the beat. You just breathe in through your nose from the chest, and then I'll count the beat out. Okay.
You ready? I'm ready for this. Yeah.
Okay. In. One, two, three, four. Out. One, two, three, four. In. One, two, three, four. Out. One, two, three, four. And you'll start. I've gone too long, but what you can do, and I do this on courses, and it's quite often a revelation to people. I can change their breathing over the course of a minute. We only did about 20, 30 seconds there. But over the course of a minute, I get them to take their pulse at the start of that exercise and then get them to do a minute of that sort of breathing. And what they'll find is almost guaranteed 90-95% of them will have found their pulse rate has slowed. It's just slowed the blood flow, or it's slowed the pulse rate, I should say, the heart rate. It's probably increased the blood flow, but reduces the heart rate and the pressure that's going through our system at that point.
And as well, it definitely changes your focus. You know, if you are, you know, thinking about lots of different things and, you know, worrying, it definitely then takes your brain away from some of that stuff, and that just gets you to focus on the breathing itself, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, that's true. The focus bit is important for the benefit because it's stopping you doing something else. People use a type of breathing as well. That's known as water breathing because it's, in general, we should drink water all the time. It's a good thing. You know, water is an essential of life. So water breathing is what we should be doing all the time, but often don't. If you just stop and think, how am I breathing? You're not breathing in four and out to four beats. Quite often we're quite short in that. The other one is to consciously think of your breathing. If you're struggling to get to sleep, they call it whiskey breathing, which is kind of something that it's occasionally good for us, but we shouldn't drink too much of it. Whiskey breathing is similar in the essence that it's something you can do over a short period of time to help you achieve something. And it's really useful in getting to sleep. I'm not going to do it now because I don't want you to fall asleep, Michael, but you go in, breathe in for four, but out for eight. Out for eight beats. You think, gosh, that's not going to work, but it does. It's amazing. I've come across that a few years ago, and if ever I do wake up at night, which I don't do very often now, thankfully, but if I do wake up at night and I'm my thoughts are in my head and I've written it down perhaps and think, well, okay, I really need to get to sleep now, breathing in for four and out for eight over a period of time and concentrating on that, thinking, right, that's coming from the right place, it's almost 100% guaranteed to get me to sleep. It's amazing.
And do you know what I really, really like about them? Apart from, as we've just discussed, sort of the physical benefits, what I really like about them is it is completely sort of self-managed. A lot of relaxation techniques require an external source, don't they? You need a book. You need somewhere to walk. You know, you need a table tennis bat. You know, so, but with that, you can do it anywhere. You can do it on a plane, in bed. You can do it when you're sat on a bus, in a meeting. You know, it's something that is completely within your management and control. So I think that's a really useful one. And I think as well with relaxation, I think this is probably something that we have you know, as we've used the term relax, oh, I need to relax more. I think it has a bit of a connotation that means doing nothing and switching off. And actually, interestingly, a lot of the things that we're talking about and we are classifying as being a relaxation technique are actually quite active, aren't they? They're actually doing something, you know, changing focus, but actually going for a run, playing table tennis, you know, attending a club, picking up the phone and calling a friend. I think that's interesting.
It is. And there's a very, it's quite famous because he appears on the TV, Kerry Cooper, who's a behavioral psychologist from Manchester University, who talks about how in terms of relieving stress and relaxing, he promotes actually doing stuff rather than not doing stuff. He calls it proactive relaxation or active relaxation rather than inactive. Because having said that, sometimes just sitting there in front of the telly watching your favorite TV program, you will find relaxing, or at least it's switching you off because you lose yourself in it. He says the benefits, the physiological benefits and the mental benefits, tend to be greater when we are doing, as you've described, slightly more active relaxation, purposeful relaxation, rather than letting it, the relaxation happen to you. You make it, you make the thing happen. So yeah. You go out for the walk, you listen to the, you read the book, you make yourself listen to the music, whatever it might be. And that is, which I found very interesting, the sitting on the couch watching TV, I find great. I switches myself off, but it's not as good for me as doing some of these other things.
Yeah, and I think it probably goes back to what we said before as well. If you are sitting there watching TV and your mind isn't focusing on the TV, you know, your mind is focusing on all the things that it was beforehand, actually maybe sitting there watching TV isn't having the desired purpose to help you relax. So it goes back to the variety, doesn't it? Yeah. And I know a big challenge, John, for everybody, really, but you know, for a lot of the people that we work with, it's thoughts, isn't it? It's yeah. The thoughts that they have and the concerns and the worries that they're having about the future and everything, you know, that people thinking and allowing themselves to think about all these different things. You know, a lot of the things haven't happened. They probably won't happen. I mean, they might happen, but they probably won't happen. And I think that's a big sort of battle, isn't it, as part of relaxation, just allowing our minds to just focus on that relaxation technique.
We know that there is an association with our thoughts and our feelings and how we feel about something, and ultimately then what we do about it, how we behave, that link. And it's the root behind all cognitive behavioral therapy, this idea of managing our thoughts in a better way, because you gave some examples there of how sometimes our thoughts can almost control us. They can control us. They say, oh my gosh, this is going to happen, or this is going to be a catastrophe, or this client won't like me, or this isn't going to work. A number of unhelpful thoughts that actually what we need to have, and this is a bit of mindfulness as well, recognizing that we're having those thoughts. We're recognizing that is a thought, and what's the word you describe it as? I know you use, is it cognitive?
Well, yeah, I mean, cognitive distortions is where we are effectively, you know, allowing our brains, you know, and our thoughts to run away with us. You know, it's an unhelpful process. You know, it's where we don't use evidence, we don't use objective facts. You know, we don't actually look at the, you know, the actual likelihood of these things happening. It's where, and we all do it, don't we? You know, we distort. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's what part of the mindfulness approach to that is actually being conscious that you are thinking that, and that thought doesn't have to control our actions, doesn't have to control our feelings. We can kind of park it. Some people call it a thought bus station, that the various buses pass through our mind. You're at the station and another bus passes you with either a helpful or an unhelpful thought. There's no need to get on that bus. Okay, leave it, recognize it, but let it go. Let it go. It's not mm-hmm. always easy to do. I know that from personal experience. Our thoughts shouldn't have to control us. But as you say, you can challenge that thought with other things, with evidence. So what's the evidence that I'm not going to be able to do this, or that it's going to go wrong? What's the evidence that they won't like me? And just really challenging it in your own mind, and not letting it control your behavior.
Yeah, yeah. Really like that, John. Oh, John, as always, so many sort of useful takeaways there, which we can, you know, at the very least sort of reflect on. And I think, you know, in summary, based on what we've been talking about there, it's the variety of, you know, the relaxation techniques and picking things which really meet the purpose of, you know, what has caused me to need to relax or to want to relax. And I think as well, from, you know, from what I've taken from this, it's the importance of making sure that we invest time in ourselves and that we make that happen.
Absolutely.
Anything else?
No, that it's okay to look after yourself as well as look after others. We all need to look after ourselves, usually more than we do. So that's an important message. Find time to self-care as well as care for others.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and challenge them on helpful thoughts as well. You know, if they are preventing us from relaxation, ask ourselves where they're coming from and what evidence we have with regards to them things. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Bye, Michael.
We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you think you would benefit from more support in this area, then please visit the management training section on the main Mercia website. Likewise, if you have any suggestions for future podcast topics, or you would like to join me as a guest speaker, please get in touch. Take care.